going to pick up again this morning on the theme of the Beatitudes that I started at the back end of the year. And the reason I want to do it, I want to honour these words of Jesus that beyond measure in terms of the wealth and the benefit to us in understanding who God is and how he sees us and what he wants from us and how we can please him. I loved that that word that Sonia brought this morning. It was just the way it describes the beauty of Jesus. It was just lovely. And he has that eternal beauty that's beyond compare. And the words that he left us with are beyond compare as well. So, is this ringing a bit? It's the time, like, yeah, thanks. I just wanted the Beatitude I want to look at this morning is from Matthew 5:7, which is, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." And that's the fifth of the Beatitudes. And in my mind, it's the first one that makes obvious sense, whereas the others, where Jesus was saying, "Blessed are the poor," or "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven," or "Blessed are those who mourn," or "Blessed are the meek," or "Blessed are those who hunger." They don't seem to make sense. They're sort of always oxymorons there. But this one, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." Yeah, that makes sense to me. I could stop there, to be honest. That's a sermon. It just makes sense. I have to be clear that it's... And some would see it as a way of salvation, which it's not. And, this salvation by good works. Like helping an old lady across the road, whether she wants to cross the road or not. We were told to do that when I was a Boy Scout. Helping a blind dog to cross the road, whatever it is. And there is that prevailing attitude that if I'm good enough, it'll outweigh my sins and God will accept me at that final day, which this isn't what Jesus is talking about. And just to remember that it's this blessedness, this blissful state, is a celebration of the one who is merciful. It's a celebration of those, because the little that we do is far outweighed by the reward that God gives us. Now we were looking at previously at the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted by God. It kind of throws us back onto God. And so Jesus is an exclamation, a congratulatory statement of the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. The little we do is far outweighed by the mercy that we get from this glorious God. And when we were looking at meekness, that beatitude, there's this word of Jesus that kind of goes counter to the current culture. We live in a world that doesn't really value meekness. Meekness is like weakness, and so it's not valued. And when Jesus was giving these beatitudes at the time, this virtue of being merciful, this virtue of mercy, was not valued by the Romans. There's one commentator, someone called John MacArthur, said that mercy was despised by the Romans. He says, and he quotes a Roman philosopher who said, "Mercy was the disease of the soul. It was the supreme sign of weakness. Mercy was a sign that you did not have what it takes to be a real man, and especially a real Roman. The Romans glorified manly courage, strict justice, firm discipline, and above all, absolute power. They looked down on mercy because mercy was to them weakness, and weakness was to be despised above all other human limitations. But you say, well, was not Jesus talking to Jews? Were they, was he not talking to Jews and not necessarily Romans? There may have been Romans in the crowd. We don't know. We don't know what the makeup of that crowd was. But, so Jesus was celebrating something that went against the prevailing culture at the time. When we like to think of ourselves as, most of us are kind of British, enjoy the British culture and all that goes with that, and all the anxieties that causes us in social, awkward social situations. And but our culture is continually being changed and affected by American culture, and we're far more Anglo-American than we are just British. And even our church culture and the values we have in church are similarly affected. And social media has a lot to do with that, with the various influences. So although we'd like to think that, we're just very British, but we are heavily influenced by American culture. And I would say at that time, the Jews would have been affected by the Roman culture. There were the Romans were ruling in Israel at the time. We were in Israel before lockdown. We were in Jerusalem during the Feast of Tabernacles, and there was an awful lot of Jews from all over the world that came there to celebrate that, and it was quite significant to be a part of that. I would say in the hotel where we stayed, which was a Jewish hotel, we were like the only dirty Gentiles there, really. But there were a lot of American Jews staying there. Like a lot of the New York law firms have probably emptied out. And they all looked like Orthodox Jews. I would say, despite the dress, despite everything that was going on, the prevailing culture that we were aware of was the American culture. There were Americans, they were dressed as Orthodox Jews, but there was this attitude, there was this influence. I don't hate Americans, and I don't hate American culture, some of it's good. We just need to be careful. We just need to be careful what we hold as values and where our focus is. I would just say that there were Orthodox Jews going to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, but a very, very obvious American culture in their midst. Wealthy, wealthy American culture. Very obvious. So the being merciful is actually involves actions, and actions towards others. The merciful, you might say, might put others before themselves, others' needs before their own. Which, it kind of goes counter to this self-centered, self-focused Western Christianity that we will hear a lot of. It's very much about what's my calling, what's my ministry, how has the Lord led me, the Lord is telling me to do this or do that. Very, very self. It's all about me, my ministry, my. And we just have to be careful that we don't get sucked into that. It's very individualistic, about self-expression, self-fulfillment, self-actualization. To quote someone, Maslow, I think, used that expression, the pinnacle of human endeavor. So we just need to be careful that we're not influenced by these cultures. So Jesus was talking about extolling and celebrating this virtue of mercifulness in a that was very counter to the prevailing culture at the time. Sometimes to illustrate the positive, sometimes it's necessary to look at the negative, and to understand understand merciful and what it's like, or what it means to be merciful. Sometimes you need to look at the antonyms of mercy, the opposite word to mercy. Because within mercy, you've got forgiveness and charity and compassion. And the antonyms to that might be cruelty, relentlessness, inhumanity, hatefulness, harshness. All of those have actions, or no actions at all. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, if you've not read his biography by Eric Metaxas, it's well worth a read. It's a big read, but it's well worth a read. A fabulous book. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a minister in Nazi Germany and opposed Hitler. And he had lots of one-liners which spoke volumes. One of which kind of sticks with me, which is not to speak is to speak, not to act is to act. And we see in all the daily news feeds coming out of Ukraine, we see cruelty, we see relentless bombardments of civilians, we see the cruel inhumanity predominantly perpetrated by Russia on the Ukrainians. I dare say there's reciprocated inhumanity and cruelty. Hateful and harsh treatment. I mean, the deliberate targeting of public utilities just prior to winter with one sole purpose of inflicting suffering and inhumanity on an innocent civilian population. Jesus said, "How blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy." No doubt within those conflicts there are always stories that come out of acts of mercy. And on the news feeds that I watch from time to time, you'll see stories of people who get in a battered van and drive to the front line to rescue civilians, just as a charitable act to go and collect them, with the potential of it costing them everything. These merciful acts will cost. Mercy does cost. Forgiving someone is costly. If someone has wronged you, and I'll keep it in the first person here, forgiveness is a great idea until you have to do it, because it costs. For me, if someone wrongs me, I'm ashamed to say that my initial feelings are that they'd be made aware of just how much they've wronged me, just how much they've hurt me. Ideally, in my twisted little mind, they would experience something similarly painful, costly, hurtful, shameful. And then I could be magnanimous in my forgiveness, because in some twisted way, justice has been done. That's karma, that's a different religion, it's not our faith. I'm sure you don't think like that, I'm just a bit bent. And that's not how God deals with us. It's not how he dealt with my sin, and I committed far more wrongs than have been done to me. I know that. I said that often in times of conflict you will hear incredible stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. I just wanted to read another story about a very ordinary man who did an extraordinary thing. You may know him and you'll know the story, I'm sure. There's a gentleman called Gordon Wilson, and he ran his family's drapery shop. He was a family man and a devout Christian. On the 8th of November in 1987, a bomb planted by the Provisional IRA exploded during Inniskillen's Remembrance Day parade, injuring Gordon Wilson and fatally injuring his daughter Marie, who was a nurse. The BBC interviewed him shortly afterwards, and Wilson described with anguish his last conversation with his daughter and his feelings towards her killers. He said, "She held my hand tightly and gripped me as hard as she could, She said, "Daddy, I love you very much." Those were her last, those were her exact words to, he says, those were her exact words to me, and those were her last words I ever heard her say. And to the astonishment of the listeners, Wilson went on to add, "But I bear no ill will, I bear no grudge. Dirty sort of talk is not going to bring her back to life. She was a great wee lassie. She loved her profession. She was a pet. She's dead. She's in heaven and we shall meet again. I will pray for these men tonight and every night." There's a historian, a chap called Jonathan Barden, who reflected on this, and he said, "No words in more than 25 years of violence in Northern Ireland had such a powerful and emotional impact." Just an ordinary man with a love for Jesus and certainty of his reward in heaven. And that interview was just hours after his daughter had died, after his daughter had been murdered by the Provisional IRA. Just another innocent bystander, as there are countless innocent bystanders in Ukraine today that would die because of others' brutal inhumanity and cruelty. One simple man who could have sought revenge and through the channel of the BBC but around the world demanded that the blood of his daughter be paid for, the blood of those who had taken her, but he chose not to. His heart was one of love and forgiveness and mercy. And as painful as it was, he chose mercy over retribution, just as Christ did. Just to finish that story, I think 6 years after that, well, over the, after that, he then went on to do a lot of peacekeeping work. And later he was nominated by the then Prime Minister to the upper house of the Irish legislature, where he served until his death in 1995. An extraordinary, ordinary man. Just to keep this legal, should we look at Matthew 18? Matthew 18, if you've got a Bible, it'll turn to it. If not, I'll just read it here. Matthew 18, verses 22 to 25, because Peter asked Jesus about how often he needed to forgive his brother. In a more modern translation, it says how often he needs to forgive his brother and sister. So Matthew 18, verses 22 to 35. Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times?" Jesus answered, "I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. And he goes on, he says, "Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. 'Be patient with me,' he begged, 'and I will pay back everything.' The servant's master took pity on him and cancelled the debt and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. 'Pay back what you owe me,' he demanded. His fellow servant fell on his knees and begged him, 'Be patient with me, and I will pay it back.' But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. 'You wicked servant,' he said. 'I cancelled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?' In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart." This parable of the I read this parable of the unmerciful servant to illustrate what it means to be merciful. And also, you know, it also has within that the contrast between the debt we think people owe us when they may wrong us or hurt us or offend us or take from us, and the debt that we owe God that we could never repay. And I also think that, you know, that those last three words, from your heart, it's possible, dare I say it, that we can say we forgive someone. It's possible, dare I say it, to say those words and to smile at them when you see them next and act like you forgive them. And yet your heart is still hard. You still carry that hurt and bear the grudge and treat them differently despite what we say. Jesus was quite explicit that we need to forgive from the heart. Because grudges are born. Well, none of us bear grudges. Others might. That's why Jesus told us these parables, so others would hear that. God can do extraordinary things through ordinary people like us, ordinary, faithful, obedient, Jesus-loving people. Gordon Wilson was one, an ordinary man that changed the course of the violence, not on his own, but certainly had a major impact. An ordinary man having a major impact in those violence. Pray to God that Ukraine doesn't go on for 25 years. There'll be nothing left. You want more people like Gordon Wilson in the right places to say the right thing, more Dietrich Bonhoeffers to influence and change the world. Simple, ordinary people with a heart for Jesus. You, me, ordinary people with a heart and a love for Jesus, obedient to him. Compassionate, charitable acts. They cost us everything. God. The thing is that, it, you know, as with these Beatitudes, there's a blessed of this person if they're like this, because God has so much more. This is one where you've got to, you know, we can be merciful, but it's really blessed if you're merciful because there's this promise. I haven't focused on the reward for being merciful, haven't touched on that. I think it's suffice to say that it's a promise. That God's mercy far exceeds our own. It may not be in exactly the same area that you express mercy, charitable acts, or anything, but it will far exceed anything that we can do. We love Jesus. I know you love Jesus. I'm just going to wait. I just want to just wait on God and see what he wants to do. We need him more than ever. We need him to transform our lives. Let's just invite the Lord. Holy Spirit, you are welcome here. Thank you that you are here already. Thank you that you are in our midst. Lord, I pray that you would come more powerfully, Lord. I pray that you would transform us. I pray that you would set us on fire for you, that you would cause our hearts to burn with love for Jesus, that might transform us, that our love for Jesus would exceed our love for ourselves.